And now on Radio 4, the classic serial. Today we start a two-part adaptation of one of J.B. Priestley's best-loved novels, Angel Pavement. Dramatised for radio by Martin Jemison, it set in 1930 at the beginning of the last Great Depression. And Jane Goldsby, played by Henry Goodman, has just arrived in London. Our guide is Marcus Brigstock.
Many people who think they know the city well have been compelled to admit that they do not know Angel Pavement. Some of the street maps of the area omit it altogether. You could wander from Barbican to Broad Street Station half a dozen times.
Constable, old chap, would you be so kind as to direct me to a place called, Angel Pavement?
Ah, sir, yes, yes, I know the name. It's just, if you go, no. Actually, come to think of it, I couldn't honestly say. Sorry, sir, you might be best off picking up the cab.
Thank you, Constable.
The little street is old. All sooty stone and greasy walls, crumbling brick and rotting woodwork. Kings and princes have never troubled it. It has never found itself on the stage of history.
Angel Pavement.
In some respects, it's not a real thoroughfare at all. At the western end, pedestrians can only escape by ascending six poorly lit stone steps. They find liberty, that is, at the end of the working day, from the dingy business frontages of Chase and Cohen, Carnival Novelties, Dunbury and Co., incandescent gas fittings, the White Horse Public House, adjacent to the dusty displays of Mr. T. Benenden, tobacconist, which is in turn adjacent to a door. A large, stout, and old door, from which most of the paint has flaked. The door has no name upon it, no address, and nobody, not even Mr. T. Benenden, has seen it open or knows what lies behind it. Perhaps it leads into another world. Perhaps it will open one morning and admit an angel, who, after looking up and down the little street for a moment, will suddenly blow the last trumpet. But not on this particular morning. Beyond the door is number 8, Angel Pavement, the offices of Twig and Dursingham, purveyors of fine veneers.
Good morning, Mrs. Cross.
Is it good, Mr. Smith?
A little nippy, but yes, I like to think so.
The brave words of Mr. Herbert Smith, for whom the job of cashier and bookkeeper for Twig and Dursingham is all that stands between him and the fear that so dreadfully illuminates the darkness. The pictures in his head of shabby and broken men haunting the labour exchanges and the newspaper rooms of the free libraries. And the dread nightmare that if it weren't for the neat columns of figures he manipulates with such dexterity, he would one day be joining them.
Did you write this, Mr. Smith?
Let me have a look.
I've been cleaning for Twigs and Dursinghams for the best part of 27 years, and I've never seen the like.
What about turning this room out for a change? Where did you find this?
I've a good mind to tear it up and throw it straight in the stove.
I'll get started then.
If no one pauses to give Turgis, the junior clerk, a second look, it is perhaps because one glance at this unprepossessing young man is normally considered enough. It's not that he's ugly, but he might attract a little more attention if he were.
This isn't my handwriting, Mrs. Cross.
Mr. Smith?
Well, it was in the general office, and if that room don't get a thorough turning over 3 times a week, I don't know.
I've been working for this firm for 30 years, and I'll swear some of that dust has been here longer than me.
Oh, did you write this?
This latest arrival is Mr. Leonard Goethe, Twig and Dursingham's travelling sales representative. He regards Mrs. Cross with the watery chill of a wet morning in February.
Shouldn't you be in Welling Garden City, Mr. Goethe?
Cancelled. Mr. Dursingham told me to come here this morning instead.
He didn't mention anything to me.
Don't ask me what it's about, because I don't know. And now I'm early. I have to talk to you lot.
Morning, everyone. Are we all very well this morning?
It wasn't till I found this note.
Miss Matfield?
Yes, I wrote that. Is there a problem?
Lillian Matfield is not a pretty woman. But she might be considered handsome if only there was someone in her life to tell her that she was.
The problem is that I don't take kindly to getting notes from a typist who's been here 3 months.
Good morning, good morning.
Mr. Dursingham.
Good morning, Mr. Dursingham.
Letters. Mr. D, I'm so glad you're here. You know, I was first taken on by your uncle, old Mr. Dursingham.
Mr. Goethe, Mr. Smith, in my office, please. As soon as you can.
Well, I never.
Oh, and Mr. Smith. Can you bring the list of current orders? And receipts?
Yes.
That won't take you long, Mr. Smith.
Howard Bromport Dursingham, the reluctant inheritor of his uncle's business, is a ruddy, pink man. His features are neither very strong nor very weak.
You fellows had better sit down.
But he is beginning to sag.
You wanted to see the order book?
Thank you.
He is puzzled by business, haunted by his failure as a youth to obtain a scholarship to Oxford, and the vague sense that there was another career he was supposed to have had.
Well, the time has come to tell you both, in strictest confidence, that if it weren't for my wife having a little money of her own, I wouldn't have been able to carry on as long as I have.
Foreigners.
Excuse me?
Germans, some of them. Cutting their costs fine as that, giving it away if you ask me. Pay when they like, too. Speaking English as good as you and me. What's the good of having a war, I say?
However, Germans aside, and given our wholesale prices, which seem to go up and up, perhaps we need to think about cutting our costs, our overheads.
That won't be easy. We're barely spending anything as it is.
What about the clerk, Turgis, or Miss Matfield?
Well, strictly speaking, they aren't counted as overheads.
That's it all, Smith. I don't want to do it, but one of them has to go. I suppose I could type some of my own letters.
Miss Matfield's the best secretary we've had.
Then you'll have to take on the boy's work. It's clear his heart isn't in the job.
That would be very challenging.
You'll have to decide.
Does it really have to be either of them?
Well, we can't spare you.
I'll need a day to think it over.
Get rid of the girl. They should never have started girls in the city. Powdering noses, cups of tea. You don't know where you are.
There's a man...
I'm busy, Turgis.
I told him that. He says it's something you can't afford not to hear.
He'll be a salesman with some gadget.
Tell him I'm in a discussion. Oh, no, no. Meeting. No, Turgis. A conference. That's what it is. It's a conference.
He said to show you these samples.
Well, me?
Mr. Goethe will look at them, Turgis.
If I must.
Did he give you a card, a name?
James Goldsby.
No, you can't go in there.
It's quite all right, Miss Matfield.
You will be pleased to make my acquaintance. Mr. Dursingham, look at me.
Actually, I'm... Mr. Dursingham.
Do I look like a man who's going to waste your time?
We're having a sort of conference thingamajig.
If you send me away now, I will go, but I will go for good. And I'll take those veneers and inlays with me.
The thing is, we have rather a lot of veneers of our own.
What do you think, old man?
You're talking to me.
They're good, aren't they?
Too good.
Yeah, see, that is what is wrong with this whole business. No ambition. No aspiration.
The thing is, we're not really at the upper end of the market. In the current economic climate, our customers want to pay less, not more.
That's what I heard, so I'm going to write a wholesale price on that piece of paper. Now, if that's not to your satisfaction, then I will vanish as if into thin air and leave you to your conference. And wish you luck into the bargain.
Oh, thank you.
Well, look at it, man.
Oh. Mr. Smith. Mr. Goethe.
You can assure us that you really can obtain this quality of inlay at this supremely low price.
It's impossible.
You give me 1 hour of your time, Mr. Dursingham. Alone.
How long have they been in there?
For a couple of hours.
2 hours and 47 minutes.
I shouldn't think there's any need for you to hang around, Mr. Goath. I'm not leaving.
Funny sort of chap, ain't he?
A loathsome brute.
The question is, where's the angel? Or should I say, who is the angel?
I'm sure I have no idea.
How about you, boy?
Oh, don't ask me.
That's Mr. Goldsby's coat. There's a good chap.
Then perhaps this beautiful young lady can enlighten us. After all, they know everything nowadays.
I beg your pardon.
It's a damn queer name for a street. Especially for one as dark as this. No air. So, Angel Pavement. Why?
I don't know. And I don't care.
And why should you? I wouldn't if I were a good-looking girl like you. I shouldn't care, tuppence.
Angels.
Coates, we're going for lunch. Mr. Goath,
perhaps you should accompany us.
It might have been easier and cheaper if you'd invited me into your little private parley.
Mr. Goath, on this occasion, you shall be my guest.
Should I come along too?
No, you hold the fort here. I'll explain everything in due course.
Mr. Dursingham, the matter we were discussing earlier...
All done with.
So, Tertius and Miss Matfield...
No need to bother with all that, not now.
If anyone calls, I should be about an hour.
The afternoon wears on. The dining triumvirate do not return. Darkness falls. Tergis and Miss Matfield are about to say their goodnights. Mr. Smeath loiters, strangely disquieted, unwilling to lock up just yet.
Ah. Is that you, old man?
Smeath, I mean.
Speaking.
It's Mr. Dursingham.
Goath.
What about him?
We're done with him. Finished. Don't want to see him again.
What? I didn't catch that.
What's he saying?
Pay him off. To the end of the month, then tell him to clear out. Right out.
What's happened?
I'll explain in the morning.
I don't understand.
You carry on, old man.
Mr. Dursingham?
Are you all right?
What did he say?
Oh, dear.
Pay me my money.
What?
Mr. Goath's ancient overcoat is hanging from his shoulders, as if it hardly belongs to him. His bowler hat is tilted forwards, casting his watery eyes into a sinister shadow.
Of course. Mr. Dursingham just told me.
What happened?
Goldsby, that's what happened. Goldsby.
What about him?
He's the devil.
Steady, old man.
Who is he, eh? Where's he come from, eh? With his drinks and cigars. Anyone can buy drinks and cigars and big lunches. I have been in this business for 30 years. 30 years! And I say, what's the game? Where's he get this fancy stuff? Who asked him to come here? Who told him to come here?
I still don't understand.
And all of a sudden, he's got Mr. Dursingham in his eyes like that. Ooh, ooh, just like, ooh, ooh, you know?
I'm not sure I do.
Hypnotism. But not me. I know the trade and I speak my mind.
I take it Mr. Dursingham didn't agree with you.
Hypnotism.
Perhaps you had a little too much to drink.
Give me my money.
Yes, of course. You'd best get straight home, old man.
I don't have a home. Lodgings. Lodgings.
Here. I'm so sorry.
No. I'm sorry. Sorry for you. Sorry for the lot of you.
I'm sure there's no need to...
38!
Oh, dear.
Thank the Lord we've seen the last of him.
Miss Matfield.
I loathed him.
But you loathe this new fellow, too. You said so.
I suppose I did. What a life.
What a life indeed. Herbert Smeath is relieved to alight from the tram and escape his troubling day. reading to himself in the cluttered living room of the family house on Chaucer Road in Stoke Newington. Mr. Smeath once tried his hand at reading Chaucer, with all his queer spellings and Canterbury pilgrims, but he really didn't make much of it.
Huh. What's that all about?
So tonight, Smeath endeavours to distract himself with a detective novel set in an old manor house.
The Body in the Library.
Unfortunately, he doesn't make much headway, because Mr. Gulsby, Mr. Dursingham, and the lurid corpse of Mr. Goethe keep appearing in the library and demanding to be included in the mystery. To his great relief, the next day, Mr. Smeath is summoned to hear what the chief protagonists have to say for themselves.
They're from the Baltic.
The Baltic?
Mm.
Is that good?
Good! They're the new thing. Top quality veneers.
And I, James Gulsby, am the sole agent.
I've seen the paperwork.
The price you quoted.
We'll do more business in the next 2 weeks than we've done in the last 3 months.
It's half of what we're paying now. As Mr. Goh said, are you absolutely sure that...
Please don't start with all that 30 years in the trade business. Whose fault do you think it was? Mr. Goldsby's made things very clear to me.
Well, as you said yourself, Howard, you've had your suspicions for some time.
Of course business is slow when we've got suppliers and customers opening the door to Goethe, depressing old mug.
He was a man who'd given up trying.
Yes, I can see that's true.
Exactly. He had to go.
So, if you don't mind me asking, Mr. Gulsby, how precisely are you going to fit into the new arrangement? Is this going to be a partnership?
Oh, Lord, no. You tell him, Dursingham.
Mr. Gulsby is our new general manager.
I'm not sure we can support another salary. Not yet. Even without Mr. Ghost.
I'll be working for commission. On delivery. Nothing more.
You see, we have absolutely nothing to lose.
We're definitely not cutting any more staff.
Quite the opposite. Miss Matfield will need some help. Hire a new typist. Straight away, a young girl will do.
As I say, I'm not entirely sure we have the funds.
You're talking about cash flow, aren't you?
Yes, Mr. Dursingham, cash flow. I doubt the bank will advance us any more, especially if we're buying in new stock.
As I think I've told you, the wife's worth a bob or two. Property, things. I'll be able to... borrow.
Invest.
Miss Matfield is typing the letters as we speak.
So can we count on you, Smeath?
Of course. I'll do my best.
If it is true that James Gulsby has hypnotic powers, then, as yet, he has not been able to exercise them on this subject, because Mr. Smeath is yet to look him directly in the eye.
Smeath!
Catching a tram!
Get the next one. Or the one after that, or the one after that. Because you and I, we're going to celebrate our new working relationship with a drink, all three. At the White Horse. Just here.
I suppose so.
Cigars.
Pardon?
You like cigars?
Pipe smoker. Mr. Benenden has his own mixture.
The very man. Mr. T. Benenden, I presume?
Gentlemen.
You got any good cigars? And I mean good cigars.
Certainly I have.
I'll be fine with my mixture.
Oh. These'll do. May I?
Excuse me.
Yeah, shush. Try that.
You haven't actually paid.
Try it, man.
Very nice.
Very expensive.
How much?
3 shillings for the two.
Half a crown and a sixpence.
So it's true.
What is?
A few changes going on at Twig and Dursingham.
Well, I'll be damned.
About what?
I knew there was something.
Mr. Gulsby?
This fella's forgotten to put his tie on.
But me?
Take a look in the mirror if you don't believe me, Mr. T. Benenden. You've forgotten your tie.
Something funny?
No.
Enjoying the cigar.
He's very good.
Let's go. What's so funny, Smeath? Smeath!
I've been buying my tobacco from Mr. Benedict 3 times a week for nearly 20 years. And you know, I've always wanted to say that.
He's forgotten his tie before.
No! Don't you see? The high collar, the starched white front. He dresses like that every day, but he never wears a tie. Never! Every time I go in there, I think I should mention something. Has he forgotten? I never do. Not in 20 years. And then you just up and say it.
Give it a name.
What?
Drink.
Half a bitter?
A cold night like this. Barman?
2 double whiskies with a little soda.
On your way, sir.
You're a good man, Smeath.
Well,
I know a good man when I see one.
Do you?
Don't think I can't see what's going on here.
What is going on?
Well, this might be young Dursingham's company. Thank you. But any fool can see that you're the man who makes everything happen.
Well, I wouldn't like to say.
Well, I would. Yeah.
Thank you.
You seem doubtful.
Well, I don't mean to appear doubtful, but I was wondering how much you actually know about the business of veneers.
So what's to know? We're selling bits of wood to glue onto other bits of wood.
Goodness.
You look shocked.
Well, only because... Well, I've often thought that myself. In fact, I've often thought that what we do is a good deal like life itself. Veneers. Making a bit of wood look better than it is. Like people.
We're veneered to hell.
Fake.
So let's slap our stuff on their rotten sideboards and wardrobes and make lots of money and enjoy ourselves. That's the game, Smeath.
That's the game. The game!
Same again, barman.
An hour later, waiting for the tram, Herbert Smeath buys 2 evening papers instead of 1 and reads neither of them. By the middle of the following week, open the outer door, and from the other side of the frosted glass partition, you can feel the difference at once.
Sing as we go and let the world go by. Singing a song, we march along the highway.
Even Miss Matfield might reluctantly admit that Mrs. Cross has achieved an optimistic, dust-free shine that the General Office probably hasn't seen during the previous 27 years of her tenure.
Twig and Dursingham. Yes, sir, that's true. You have heard correctly. We are offering quality Baltic inlays at those prices.
17 guineas, £13, 7 shillings and threepence, £16, 19 and 11, 30.
Mr. Smeath is as happy as a monk at a manuscript.
Miss Matfield rattles off her letters with slightly less contempt and disgust. As if they are no longer the effusions of complete lunatics, but are now merely the work of village idiots.
And such is her expanded workload that, as promised...
Miss Poppy Sellers, the new typist.
Oh, yeah. Turgis, clear a space for Miss Sellers. There's a good fellow. Sit there.
She's not a dog, Mr. Turgis.
It's all right, really.
If you could just type out this advertisement for a new travelling sales representative.
Young, keen and energetic.
It has been said that the modern English do not like work. But the day after the advertisement appears in the Daily Telegraph, a hurricane of applications fall upon Twig and Dursingham. And all of them are keen, and energetic, if not necessarily young.
As far as I can see, we can have the pick of England's talent for £4 or £5 a week. There isn't a thing these fellas can't do, except find work.
Mr. Smith shudders at this reminder of the dark abyss. And they settle on a tall man with a remarkably small head.
George Sandycroft.
And twice the ordinary number of teeth.
I know the trade. I know the people. I know the ropes.
We don't want him knowing too many ropes, do we, Dursingham?
No, I suppose we don't.
If Mr. Dursingham sounds hesitant, it's because he's not quite sure which ropes Mr. Golspie is referring to. In fact, there are a few things about Golspie that Howard Dursingham isn't quite sure about. Primarily, the big man's tendency to jeer and sneer in a way that leaves his mind bruised and resentful.
He's not a gentleman.
No, darling.
I don't even know where he's from.
Is he foreign?
I've no idea. I'm simply saying he isn't what I would call an Englishman.
He speaks the language, doesn't he? Does he have an accent?
I'm not saying he isn't English, although, who knows?
Then what are you saying?
Dursingham is reluctant to admit to his wife that he has come to believe that Golspie is a bounder. But a bounder who has given the company a glorious new lease of life. To remedy this growing disquiet, he does the only logical thing and invites Mr. Golspie to dinner.
More soup?
Mary Dursingham does not enjoy her life in SW5. She doesn't like the high ceilings of their maisonette in Barkfield Gardens. She doesn't feel comfortable with her appearance. She's not unattractive, but like her husband, she is beginning to sag. And on this particular evening, the very last thing she wanted to do was host a dinner party.
I won't, thank you.
Someone once described Miss Vereva as a cadaverous virgin, which was unfortunate because she had only developed her relentlessly withering manner so that she might not be overlooked when in company.
So, Golspie, old chap, you found your way here, right?
Came in a taxi.
That's the best way if you're going to a strange house.
Of course, we've only come from upstairs.
Mr. and Mrs. Pearson are a friendly, lonely couple who have recently retired and have no idea what to do with their time. This evening is an event of some significance for them.
Mary tells me you've been working abroad.
The Pearsons are only recently back from Singapore.
So where do you live, Mr. Golspie?
She's got a flat in Maida Vale.
We don't know that part, do we?
It's full of Jews in music hall terms.
Looks like everyone's finished.
Old music hall terms, not the good-looking young'uns.
Oh, you men. I wonder where Agnes has got to. Excuse me.
New maid. Agency.
Agnes!
So...
Golspie, here, you a rugger man?
Soccer.
Yeah, the professional stuff. It's a dirty business selling fellas for money and so on. It's very unsporting.
Agnes!
If a poor man could play a game well, then he's as much right to earn a living from that as he could from cleaning windows or selling tripe.
Tripe?
My wife hates tripe.
It's snobbery, Mr. Pearson. It's too much snobbery in this country.
A sport and business.
You don't get snobbery like this where I've been.
There's two different things.
The sport is business. Unless you're saying that a man shouldn't be allowed to earn £7 a week from knocking a ball around.
What is this argument about?
Cutlets!
What?
I hope that's to everyone's taste.
She's on her way. Perhaps I could collect your bowls. Speed things along. Who's seen a good show recently? I hear that new thing at His Majesty's is terribly good.
What's it called?
Now let me see. It's called, No, it's gone.
You're quite right. I heard that was terribly good, too.
In what way, exactly?
It's actually got a very striking title.
I can never remember titles.
What's the name of the chap who wrote it?
Was it a man? I thought it was a woman.
Wilson. No, Wilkinson. definitely Wilkinson.
You're thinking of the chap who came to mend the wires. You know, Dursingham, that electrician on the Oscourt boat.
I'll look it up and tell Mrs. Dursingham in the morning and then she can ring you or something.
I shall look forward to it.
Where is that girl?
That's her now, with our delicious cutlet.
Come in, Agnes.
Can you do the door, Mrs. Dursinger?
It's open, Agnes.
Sorry.
Well, there goes our dinner.
Oh, my God! Agnes, you stupid little fool!
Well, it's not my fault. I've only got one pair of hands.
Which is why you have to put the tray down before you open the door.
Well, I'm not staying here a minute longer.
Agnes!
You are aware that gravy is going to stain.
Howard, what are we going to do? Omelette!
And Mrs. Pearson, grown grey with the past months of time-killing, becomes at once crimson, rich and glorious. Not 2 minutes away, in the maisonette upstairs, she has eggs, bottled mushrooms and a little cheese.
This is as good an omelette as I've had for years. And that's saying something, because I've been in places where they can make omelettes. They can't make omelettes here in England.
I'm not quite sure I approve of a man continually running down his own country. It isn't done.
Well, at its time it was done. Most of the people I meet here seem to be living in a fool's paradise.
Now, Mr. Goldsby, I'm sure you don't mean to call us fools. We simply won't have it, will we, Mrs. Pearson?
Mary?
I've had the absurdest letter from Alice. When I read it, it made me howl.
Then we must hear all about it.
Oh, it was too ridiculous.
Too ridiculous? In what way?
Everyone is staring at Mrs. Dursingham, who is racking her brains to remember the slightest amusing thing in that letter. Or, failing that, something amusing in any letter she has ever received from anybody.
Well, you see, Mr. Goldsby, Alice is my sister, and, well, the things she comes out with. I suppose it isn't really funny if you don't know her, but the minute I start reading, I can see her in my mind. I can hear her voice, and unless you can do that, I dare say the humour of it doesn't quite come over.
Well, try us.
Would anyone like dessert? I think we have some fruit.
No, I want to hear the funny story.
Alice has a dog. A very funny, absurd dog.
Perhaps I should get that, especially considering that I'm not quite sure where Agnes has gone.
No, I'll go.
Well, no need. I'm already there.
I wonder who that could be.
The post. Perhaps late post.
You were telling us about the dog.
What dog?
Your sister's dog. The funny one.
I have never found dogs particularly amusing. Although I dare say Mr. Goldsby has met some hilarious creatures in other countries.
Well, as it happens, I was in Riga just recently.
Somebody to see you, Mr. Goldsby.
Oh.
Me?
You're a rotten father.
Lena, my girl. Oh, yeah, quite right. I'd forgotten all about you.
You didn't say you had a daughter?
I rest my case. Didn't you get my letter?
She wrote to tell me she was coming from Paris.
Ah.
But he didn't say when or how or where. I left a message with the caretaker in Maida Vale.
And if he'd said it was black tie, I would have changed. I brought over 3 marvellous dresses. I mean to say it crossed my mind, but it didn't seem worth it.
In that moment, Mary Dursingham decides she has never disliked a girl at first meeting as much as this one.
It doesn't matter in the least. Shall we go into the drawing room?
Coffee? Port!
Oh, I'd adore a cocktail if there are any going.
Well, I'm sure I can make
There aren't any cocktails going.
Well, I should think not. I'll give her cocktails.
When you get home, eh, Mr. Gosby?
Walter!
Oh,
is that a Bechstein?
Oh, Lena, you must at least have a tube. Oh. Do us good.
Oh, yes.
Bravo!
Oh, yes, delightful. Do play.
All right, Daddy.
Thank you.
stop that noise.
Coffee, port!
I have a terrible headache.
Have you had it all evening, or did it come on just now?
Does it matter?
I ask because I've been travelling all day and you didn't offer me any food, which you've obviously been wolfing down all evening, seeing as you've only just finished and it's past 9 o'clock, but you haven't had a decent word for me. In fact, you've been rotten as hell.
Lena!
What? What have I done? I don't even want to be in her beastly house. Take me home, Daddy, take me home.
Well, perhaps we should just...
Everyone's a little tired, travelling, headaches.
Walter and I should be getting back.
No, please don't, Mrs. Pearson. It's still very early. Yeah.
And the hostess's headache is clearly about to get a lot better.
Come
along, Lena. Let's pick up a cab.
I'll, see you in the morning.
Of course, Thursingham. Old chap. Another day.
They were awful. Both of them.
Yeah.
I don't care what I said or what I did. They were ghastly. Next time, if you want to invite anyone from Angel Pavement, bring the clerks and typists. Anybody but those awful Goldsbys!
Oh, there.
And when dialogue is reduced to this...
Oh, there.
It's time to quit the scene. And see if the tears are still flowing in the taxi, speeding its way back to Maida Vale.
What a bunch of rotten snobs.
To be absolutely fair, the maid dropped all the food on the floor.
Well, you had a lucky escape then. I bet it was the most awful muck. And it wasn't just me they were being sniffy to. I can't believe you think those people are your friends.
Did I say they were?
They're the new people you're in business with, aren't they?
Then we're going to make a lot of money.
We?
Shh. Just you keep quiet and leave it to me, Miss Goldsby.
So what of the clerks and typists Mrs. Dursingham would rather have to dinner, busily making money for Mr. Goldsby's ambiguous plural pronoun?
Hello there, is that City Transport? It's Twig and Dursingham.
This, in case you have forgotten, and I wouldn't blame you if you had, is Turgis, the junior clerk.
You're Doris, aren't you? It's Turgis. Turgis. Yeah, I've been told to ring you about that order, the one to Sutton Coalfield. Remember? Don't you? No? Well, we did. We had a right funny old chat. You were laughing.
Turgis is, by temperament, a lover.
It was 3 days ago. I was telling you about that movie I saw at the Sovereign, The Glad Ragway. You must remember, it's got Lulu Castellar in it.
Happiness, for Turgis, has a feminine shape. It would be easy to see him as a figure of furtive lusts.
No, I don't mean that you... she's got a new picture coming out next week, if you fancy.
Turgis knows he is no lady killer.
Oh, well, if you'd rather not.
But in spite of his shabby suit and frayed tie... and his permanently open mouth, and his pasty cheeks.
But I thought we could get through all the stuff about these orders if we had a sort of a business meeting.
His matted hair and his spotty forehead.
In a cafe or something. After work.
Turgis knows inside that sooner or later, a beautiful and passionate girl, caring nothing for such outward show, will recognise the wonderful person within and cry...
Oh, Turgis, it's you.
Oh, no, don't matter. It's order number 472. They was wondering... Right, good, I'll tell them. Oh, Doris, before you go... If you don't like Lulu Castellar... Doris?
I heard you.
What?
The other day. Your jokes. They were funny.
What were you doing listening to my private conversations?
Nothing's private in here.
Well, it flaming well should be.
Oh, that's me squashed.
Turgis had high hopes of Miss Poppy Sellers when she first arrived, but as he says to himself in the mirror tonight,
she's a very poor bit of girl stuff.
And Turgis knows a fine bit when he sees one. The ripe girl sitting alone in the corner of a cafe.
Mind if I join you?
I do, actually.
Oh.
Or the adorable secretary squeezing along the platform of the tube.
Oh, I mind where you're putting your ends.
Oh, I thought you were going to fall.
I know how to walk, thank you very much.
Or the rounded feminine leg encountered in the dark of the Sovereign Picture Theatre.
This seat free?
Yeah.
Has it been on long?
Oh, about 10 minutes. Make yourself comfortable.
Nothing. Just clearing out a few things.
A whiff of scent as she sits down next to Turgis.
There's the suitcase and those are your clothes. I do have some imagination, you know.
Turgis has an imagination. One where a sweet-smelling Lulu Castellar is sitting right next to him, there in the Sovereign Picture Theatre.
Do it. There's nothing for me here.
I'm here. Doesn't that count for anything?
Their elbows touch on the arm of the seat.
Ever since the accident, all I do is bring bad luck. I have to start again.
His leg finds hers.
I could come with you.
The effect is electric.
Why would you do that? Look at me. I'm a nobody. A pen pusher.
And then, purely by chance, Turgis' fingers are intertwined with hers.
You can't give up your luck.
I can and I will.
I won't let you.
Don't you realise that I love you? That I've always loved you? You're in my dreams every night.
But now, Turgis regards Lulu Castellar with benevolent detachment.
It's too late.
Kiss me.
The dreams on the screen are nothing to the pulsating reality in the warm gloom beside him.
No. Get away from me!
Well, how do you like the picture, then?
I don't like that, Lulu Castellar.
Turgis is in shock. Not only does she not like Lulu Castellar, she doesn't look like her either.
Well, I don't know. She's all right.
Each their own.
She's hideous. She's got to be 30 if she's a day.
So, what are you doing now?
Got my sister to meet, so I'll say goodnight.
Night!
But somewhere, deep inside him, is a hot, little, angry man.
You all right, mate?
Yeah.
Turgis has never been in love. No, that's wrong. He is perpetually in love. All that's missing is the girl. That one girl.
Twiggin Dursingham.
Excuse me. Is my father here?
Sorry?
Mr. Goldsby, my father? And this is his place, isn't it?
Hang on. I'll wing you back. It's just, someone very important has come into... I'm not saying you're not important. I'll ring them back.
He told me to call for him.
I think he's got someone in with him.
I'll wait. He hates being interrupted.
You could sit there.
Oh, yes.
Stop!
What?
I'll give it a wipe. The seat. It's a bit grimy.
Oh. Thank you. That's so sweet of you.
It shouldn't be long.
If you'd like to sign these.
They're all the same, are they?
The same as what?
The draft I gave you.
Well then, as a matter of fact, they aren't.
Oh, really? Well, as a matter of fact, why not, Miss Matfield?
I've changed was into were in two places for the sake of making it more grammatical.
Half a minute.
I beg your pardon.
Not more grammatical, just grammatical. Either it's grammatical or it isn't.
I don't pretend to be particularly marvellous at grammar, but I know the difference between was and were.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. However, I'm more interested in finding out what you do pretend to be marvellous at.
Does that matter?
I like to know these things.
Aren't we a little busy, Mr. Goldsby?
Quite right. Take this down. To Mr. Borstein at Anglo-Baltic.
Can I get you anything?
No. You've been a complete darling.
So, Mr. Goldsby's your father?
Yes, he is.
Good.
Yours impatiently, James Goldsby.
Impatiently? That's hardly a proper way to conclude a letter.
I'm an impatient sort of fellow.
As long as you don't try to be impatient with me.
I wouldn't dream of it. And I can't imagine a man who would.
No. Because there isn't a man alive who'd dare.
Oh, I don't believe that. Not for an instant.
You can believe what you like, Mr. Goldsby.
Like the evidence of my two eyes, for instance.
What evidence?
I saw you on Saturday night at the Caladium. Did you enjoy the show?
Not particularly.
How about your young man?
Oh, good Lord. Norman isn't my young man. He's
what, Miss Matfield?
Well, for a start, he's not particularly young.
Well, I'd have said he's rather keen on you.
If I'd known you were spying on me...
What? What would you have done?
He's an old friend from home. Nothing more.
If you don't like a chap, you really shouldn't waste his time.
Mr. Goldsby.
I thought I told you I did not want to be interrupted.
It's...
Oh, speak up, boy.
It's your daughter. She's outside.
Lena? Lena! Lena, my girl, I'd forgotten all about you.
You're always forgetting about me, Father.
Is that her?
Yeah.
What did he say her name was?
Lena. Lena Goldsby. Lena. Lena. Lena! Lena!
While young Turgis is transported by dreams of love, Mr. Smeeth's nocturnal transports are far less prepossessing.
Oh, a little bit of wood. Oh, glue. Oh, I'll give them back. Baltic.
Herbert?
Oh, it's all right, Edie. Go back to sleep.
Bad dream.
I lost my job.
Herbert!
I was wandering the streets, afraid to come and tell you.
But you're so happy at the moment. I've never seen you this happy, not in the whole 20 years we've been married.
22 years.
Oh, you and your dumbass.
I didn't have any clothes on. Well, my vest and pants, of course. The only thing I had to cover myself up with were these Baltic veneers.
I told you it was a bad idea to eat that fried liver before bedtime.
I'll get a glass of water.
There's nothing wrong, is there? I mean, with the business.
Far from it. We're doing a roaring trade. When I go to the bank, I'm treated like a VIP. That's why I've been working late every night. So many orders to process.
Stop off at the chemist's. They're bound to have something to help you sleep more soundly.
Please, Edie, it was a one-off. Dreams, eh?
But we know Mr. Smeeth well enough by now to know this isn't true. Although mostly the anxiety is no more than a nasty little ticking at the back of his head.
Sit down, old chap.
What's this about? Is something the matter?
Well, first things first. Mr. Goldsby is leaving us.
What?
Sit down. You look like you're going to faint.
That's why he hasn't come in today.
He's not going for good.
But he's our link to the suppliers. Without them...
And that's exactly where he's going, to the Baltic, to make sure the supply... something or other thingamy is just so. He'll be back in a few weeks. Look, do you need a glass of something?
No. But I'm still concerned that he should be leaving us at such a critical time in our expansion.
He said you would be, which is why you, Smeeth old chap, are getting a rise. How would another pound a week suit you?
This was Mr. Gosby's idea.
I made my mind up to it days ago. I just hadn't... how about we start it from next fortnight? And another 10 shillings for Miss Matfield. Mr. Gosby was very keen on that one.
Thank you.
And I don't think it'll be the last either. You've been loyal all these years, so it's only fair that you rise as the firm rises. Who knows where we'll end up, eh, Smith?
I've no idea.
Miss Matfield?
Yes, Mr. Dursingham?
Mr. Gosby's sailing to the Baltic.
The Baltic?
He's asked for you to go down to the ship to take some letters. It's on Hayes Wharf. Do you mind?
No, of course. It'll be a little jaunt, I suppose.
Miss Matfield isn't usually known for her little jaunts, but then nothing feels quite usual at Twig and Dursingham right at the moment.
Good evening, Mr. Benenden.
How the usual, Mr. Smeeth. 2.5 ounces.
And tonight, I will have one of those cigars.
Oh!
Not the very expensive ones, the next one down. In fact, maybe just the cheapest one at the bottom.
Some sort of celebration.
Imagine, if you will, that you receive a welcome, if unexpected, increase in your income. Also, imagine that your wife is, as they say, a true daughter of cocaine. That is, an inhabitant of the mythical land of plenty.
Daughter of cocaine? I've not heard that one before.
I'm not saying she's a spendthrift, nor does she complain when the money's tight. But let's imagine you had an idea of putting this money aside for a rainy day. But you also know that she might have different ideas. Would you be tempted to keep your little windfall to yourself, at least for a while?
Oh, I'm the wrong person to ask, Mr. Smeeth. Separated.
Oh, sorry, Anne.
Nearly 10 years ago now. There you are. Yeah. Not so different, really. If she wants to go out, I want to stay in. If she wants to stay in, I want to go out. Right cat and dog life, that was. Lasted 3 years. Saw about 18 months ago. In front of one of them stalls where they do free samples of jelly and custard.
What did you say? What did she say?
Oh, I didn't stop. You don't want to be having arguments in front of a jelly and custard stall, if you get my meaning.
No, I don't suppose...
Now, don't get me wrong. Marriage is all right for those that have the knack. But I want to do what I like, when I like, with time to think it over.
And that's why you don't wear a tie.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
There's your change.
On the tram, Mr. Smeeth resolves not to tell Mrs. Smeeth about the pay rise until he has made firm arrangements to save it, week by week.
What I like, when I like, and with time to think it over. Hello, I'm home!
Oh, Dad!
Edna. What on earth's the matter?
It wasn't my fault.
Edna!
She's lost her job.
What?
I warned her. It's no time to be speaking your mind at work.
I'll ask her around. There might be something on Angel Pavement, but she'll have to put her mind to it.
She's talking about that apprenticeship at the milliner's with Mrs. Talbot. She says that's the only thing she really wants to do, and I believe her. But there's no pay for 6 months. I've told her we can't afford it. Herbert? Can we?
Well, as it happens.
And as it happens, as our first visit to Angel Pavement draws to a close, on the river between London Bridge and Tower Bridge, Miss Matfield is carefully picking her way up the gangplank of a rusty steamship of uncertain origin.
Miss Matfield! Up here!
Come in, come in. We've got about 2 hours before she sails.
Mr. Dursingham said you wanted me to take some letters.
Mm-hmm. I've roughed something out, it's on the table.
Oh. Thank you. I'll type them up in the morning. Unless you need them doing tonight.
No, nonsense, nonsense. Sit down. I brought you all this way.
All right.
Have a drink. Something to warm you up.
Oh, I'll get some tea on the way home.
Tea? You're on a ship. When in Riga, hmm?
What is it?
Vodka.
I've never had vodka. Down in one.
Is that a challenge?
What do I say? Cheerio.
If you like. Cheerio. Cheerio. Mm. And one more for luck.
If you make me drunk, I shan't be able to type your letters, you know.
Mm. Cheerio. I like you, Miss Matfield. That was done in real style. I noticed that right at the start, that day in the office. I said to myself, this girl, she's not only got looks, she's got character.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
Marvellous.
Sort of hypnotises you, doesn't it?
Yes. It does, rather.
I wish you were coming with us.
I hope you have a good trip, Mr. Gillespie. But don't forget to come back. What?
I won't. How could I possibly forget about Angel Pavement?
In Angel Pavement by J.B. Priestley, dramatised for radio by Martin Jameson, James Gillespie was played by Henry Goodman and Herbert Spieth by Jeff Rawl. Harold Turgis was Joe Kloska, Miss Matfield, Victoria Brazier, Mr. Dursingham, Carl Prekop, Mr. Goath, Sean Prendergast, Mrs. Cross, Fenella Norman, Lena Gillespie, Faye Castello, Mr. Benenden, Stephen Critchlow, Poppy Sellers, Millie Binks, Mary Dursingham, Colleen Prendergast, Edie Smith, Jane Purcell, and Agnes, Lucia Cox. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Our guide to Angel Pavement was Marcus Brigstock. Technical presentation was by Nick Taylor and Eloise Whitmore. It was directed by Chris Wallace and is an Autolycus production for BBC Radio 4.
And the final part of Angel Pavement is next week at the same time. After the news, Book Club discusses Gillian Clarke's new poetry collection, Ice.
So at noon, by coach to St Paul's Churchyard, to my bookseller.
Dark prophecies trouble London's most famous diarist.
Here it is, Mr Pepys. Here it is, I found it for you yesterday.
And it is in prophecy of this year?
Yes, Mr Pepys, the mark of the beast, stating that God's holy judgment will be upon us this year.
The Diary of Samuel Pepys, starring Chris Marshall.
Oh, I am so afeard.
We both are.
We are.
Weekday mornings at 10:45 on BBC Radio 4.